This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at Will Pruitt and at Barnett Jake. On today's show, Will and Jake discuss the worst of 2016. Looking for great wrestling coverage as we head into the new year and onto the road to WrestleMania? Check out ProWrestling.net membership. For $7.50 a month or as low as $5.50 a month if you take the annual option, you can get ad-free access to ProWrestling.net plus all of our audio updates, including ProWrestling.net Weekly, which this week has an ROH roster breakdown that is packed with exclusive news and notes you're not going to get anywhere else. Head to ProWrestling.net and sign up for membership today. So, Jake, it's a new year, and you and I seem to need to discuss the worst of the past year. I don't like it. I ended the last show, basically, by saying I was an optimist, but it's time to get mighty pessimistic here and talk about the bad stuff in 2016, and there was plenty of it. I'm going to let you kick this one off.
Well, I think the last show when we talked about how the women's division has been handled, we praised the women themselves and their performances and how they've actually been put in a position where, you know, they're main eventing pay-per-views and they're main eventing episodes of television shows, and they're treated like stars, and that is a departure from, you know, not that long ago, and it was an encouraging sign in 2016. But there is, you know, there is other stuff that goes along with it. I think the creative has still lacked, and I think there's still, and we talked about this, you know, previously when discussing the women's division, there's still a very, I hate to use the term, but it almost feels like they're mansplaining the women's stories through the women. Like, there's a very male perspective to how they're telling these stories. Oftentimes, you know, especially with the very long Sasha Banks and Charlotte story, they felt the need to interject, you know, Mick Foley or Ric Flair, you know, into these stories, and they're not really letting the women speak for themselves. And when they do speak, it sounds like lines that were written from a man's perspective. You know, it's very difficult for, say, my wife to watch women's wrestling in WWE and pay attention to the stories, because she's like, I wouldn't say anything like that. And nobody I know, you know, that's not like how women have, you know, arguments. It's not how they have conversations. And I think that's a valid criticism. And I think it's carried over, you know, into all of the women's stories at various times. And so I think there's that issue. And there's also the issue of WWE incessantly complimenting themselves about having a more successful women's division while it's happening. You know, so much of the creative has been influenced by the need to remind us about how revolutionary it is that they're treating women with respect, when it's something that they should have been doing the entire time, and it's only been a recent development that they thought they should take it seriously. I think it's complete nonsense that they're basically saying, well, you know, we deserve credit for doing something that is something that should have been common sense for the last 20 years. And so I think there's a lot to unpack with the women's division, but those are my primary complaints, is that the storytelling and WWE's need to take credit for something, you know, that they held back for years is mind-blowing to me.
And that has been a huge point of contention for me as well. I've complimented WWE, and I think rightfully so, on how they have placed women in big spots. They presented women like they were main eventers at WrestleMania. They've presented women as main eventers on Raw. They let women main event a pay-per-view this year. But at the same time, they haven't told compelling stories around them. They have found the need to involve men in so many of those stories about women that it doesn't make sense. I mean, WWE TV still doesn't really pass the Bechdel test of two female characters on screen for a significant period of time discussing anything but a man, because Sasha and Charlotte still got to bring up Rick for some reason. It makes no sense, because those two can stand on their own, but they don't allow them to. I think it's been disappointing that so many of the revolutionary moments that women have gotten to have been on the brand that is just creatively void of any solid storytelling in Monday Night Raw. It's just, hey, they're going to have matches. And yeah, they're good matches, but it's frustrating. And my true complaint, the thing that frustrates me the most, and you mentioned this too, WWE is self-aggrandizing their efforts to not objectify women. Guys, you were the ones doing it. You're acting like, oh, well, now we can finally do this thing we wanted to do for so long. No, you were the ones having bra and panties matches. You were the ones having these ridiculous bikini contests. You were the ones having, you know, Santa's Little Helper Battle Royals instead of having a compelling women's division with women who can fight and who want to fight and who are worth watching fight. This was WWE's fault. It was never that they lacked the talent. It was never that they lacked the ability. It was that they lacked the need. They lacked the want to do it. And WWE is a few years too late on this to say, well, we're revolutionary. No, you're just catching up with where you should have been 10 years ago. And it has been really frustrating to watch and to want to congratulate them because, my God, they finally understood and got it. But at the same time, to have to go, wait, but it took you forever. On the last show, I talked about the men sitting behind us at WrestleMania who were very casual fans. But I think just there, you know, WrestleMania's in town. Yeah, I'll go. I'll grab a few beers. It'll be a good time. These three dudes were just, when the women started to enter on the show, went, oh, well, this is just a match so people have something to look at, I mean. And they continued to discuss it, and their opinions changed throughout the match as the women put on an impressive spectacle. But that sticks with me as WWE caused women to be treated this way. WWE wanted women to be seen and treated this way. And I don't think they have done enough, even this year, to be able to congratulate themselves for getting out of it. It's kind of ridiculous.
They should be apologetic, yeah, to be honest with you.
They really should.
It should be a shameful part of their history. I mean, not necessarily, you know, shaming the women who were involved in it, because honestly, that's just what they were, you know, that's what they were paid for, and they just did a job. And so I'm not going to shame anybody for being a part of it, but they won't even recognize that it happened. I mean, if you look at how WWE presents the history of the women's division, it goes from Moolah to Trish and Lita to the Four Horsewomen, and they act like nothing in between those periods happened. You know, they're hesitant to, you know, recognize people they put in the Hall of Fame. They don't bring up Alundra Blaze on television. They don't bring up Sunny on television. They don't bring up Michelle McCool or Layla or you know, any of the women who made the Divas division what it was for years. You know, the only reason the term Divas is really even brought up anymore is because they decided that they didn't want to rename their television show their reality show. You know, it's sort of bizarre to me that instead of, you know, sort of using that period as a historical reference or something that they've learned from and moved on from, and are attempting to present, you know, this new women's division as some kind of atonement for their past mistakes, they just pretend that it doesn't exist. And that's exactly the approach that they've taken with other more shameful parts of their history, including all the chair shots to the head that have vanished from video packages and things like that. So I think it just goes to show you that they, you know, their failure to learn from the past is a serious problem, because it creeps into other parts of the show. Not only, you know, their creative effort, but just the way that they, you know, that they treat people. I think a lot of it, you know, it could be done a lot more respectfully to, you know, not only the fans, who they should treat with more intelligence, but their own talent, who should be, you know, treated with a little bit more respect, especially people who, you know, were just doing what they were told to do at the time, but now don't even get the recognition that they existed.
Yeah, pretending Michelle McCool and Layla weren't there, Beth Phoenix wasn't around, and that they couldn't have done this is absurd to me, and it is really disappointing. While I would say that how WWE has used women is one of the best things they did this year, I would also as you said, counted among the worst that it's been this difficult and it has taken this long and the WWE seems to not really get it and get what the issue was there. WWE has scooped up a lot of indie wrestlers over the past year. 2016 has been a year of some crazy signings from WWE and just a lot of signings from WWE. And you wanted to talk about a little bit of that and where you think indie wrestling is going as part of this list.
Yeah, I found the whole process really interesting from the perspective of, well, the wrestling landscape is changing again. And I think there are people who are starting to recognize what it could become. You know, you hear, you know, guys like Kenny Omega, you know, talking about the end of the golden age of the indies and WWE signing people just to sign them and put them on the bench. And, you know, is that something that's happening? I don't know. I mean, it's hard to fault people for signing to the company they've always wanted to work for and make money that they couldn't make anywhere else and, you know, try and go for a shot at being a success on the big stage. And I think it would be selfish of, you know, people like us and other fans to deny, you know, to say, well, you should stay in the indies because I really like, you know, what indie wrestling has been for the past 2 years, you know, where you've had just an explosion of talent all over the world. And you know, the internet and streaming and you know, other technology has made it possible for, you know, for people to, you know, to get access to all kinds of wrestling that they would never have been able to get to otherwise. And so, you know, there is this sort of momentum in indie wrestling where WWE is starting to recognize how much talent there is out there. And you could see it in Triple H's own attitudes towards indie wrestling, where a couple of years ago he talked about it like, yeah, you know, there's guys out there that we like, but you know, we found that when we bring them in, you know, they don't want to learn, they don't have the right attitude. And to today where he talks about indie wrestling, like it's always been this integral, vital part of, you know, of the wrestling business. And so I think the future of what indie wrestling will be is up in the air. Whether they can generate enough talent to succeed in an era where WWE is just scooping guys up because they want to put together a tournament for the network. And then, you know, they end up in NXT or training or just generally off the market. And so I think there's a risk that we could see the quality of indie wrestling shows decline, but whether that, you know, going to be true or not, I can't say with any certainty. But one thing we can say is that WWE is attempting to turn, you know, a lot of these global indie wrestling markets into farm systems, and I think it works for them, but I just don't know if it works for everybody else.
Yeah, and I think that's a fascinating thing WWE is going through. I'm curious to see if they end up with some sort of international farm system as we go through 2017. But yeah, to your point, it does seem like we are reaching the end of a really good era in indie wrestling. We are reaching the end of some of the greatest stuff we've seen in wrestling and some really fun, really great experimental stuff. And that is a bummer. I'm curious to see how much of that ends up worked into WWE, how much of that ends up being a little lost, how much of it falls by the wayside, how many guys do end up signed and just benched all year or put down in NXT to prop up that brand, but have nothing else done with them. And I'm really, really curious to see how that goes. 2016 has been a year of, I'm sure, really great stuff in the careers of a lot of these wrestlers in getting signed and the accomplishment of a major goal, but also a year of bumming out fans who I think enjoyed seeing certain guys, even, you know, AJ Styles, Roderick Strong, Austin Aries, enjoyed seeing a lot of these talents on the indie scene. And now they don't really get to, and that's a bummer. Something that surprises me to put on this list, with all of those signings we're talking about, Jake, how is it that NXT has gone from a vibrant and good storytelling atmosphere to just being one of the most horrendous and boring TV shows to watch on a weekly basis. It's not outright bad, but I have found NXT TV to just be obnoxiously boring in 2016.
Could it be that they just lost their lead writer to SmackDown and that show has improved while NXT has declined?
And maybe that guy's kind of a genius.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah. That honestly is my theory. I think Jason and I were talking before we did the Rogue One audio review a couple weeks ago now. We were talking a little bit about wrestling, and Ryan Ward is just brilliant, apparently, because he made NXT good. He leaves and it completely falls off the map. And then he goes to SmackDown, a show that we looked at the roster of, weren't impressed, that we were kind of dreading. At least it's got John Cena, but everything else looked a little meh. And suddenly SmackDown is the most compelling TV show in wrestling. That dude knows how to write some wrestling TV, and NXT has really been hurt by him being gone.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought week-to-week NXT television was just like this brilliant hour that was unmissable, but they generally put together some good main events, and there was enough, you know, story threading throughout the weekly shows where, you know, when by the time they, you know, they got to the takeover events, it really felt like there was a story unfolding. And so, you know, to their credit, that was the case until he left. And I think they just haven't quite picked up the pieces since then. And you know, they have the talent. I mean, you know, the takeover shows are always enjoyable, whether or not you, you're a fan of the television shows on a weekly basis. But they just haven't been able to keep that that storyline momentum despite having, you know, just this amazing pool of talent to work with. It's kind of shocking how much, you know, just a single change in creative output can massively impact everybody's attitude about a show. I mean, it really does feel completely missable now, whereas it did not before.
And we're talking about a completely missable show that includes, up until recently, Austin Aries, Roderick Strong, Shinsuke Nakamura, Samoa Joe, like the list of talent on NXT, The Revival, and Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, for God's sakes. The list of talent on NXT is, to quote Bobby Roode's music, glorious. The actual creative output of the show, negligible. It doesn't matter. It's not all that impressive. It is what it is. It's not the most exciting thing, which definitely bums me out. I really, really enjoy watching the show. I really enjoy watching good wrestling, and NXT creatively has been dreadful this year. I'm looking forward to when we get a little bit of talent turnover in NXT at this point. I'm looking forward to guys getting called up, to Shinsuke Nakamura being gone. As much as I enjoy watching him, I would much rather watch him on the main roster. The same goes for Samoa Joe. It is what it is.
I think they could, I mean, there's guys on NXT that could immediately make SmackDown a much better show. Like, if you gave Ryan Ward access to Nakamura and Bobby Roode, that show becomes amazing immediately. Like, you could just see where they would fit in. Like, you know, and that's the crazy thing where, you know, it's like there's talent in NXT where it's like if they were given a bigger stage, they would definitely take advantage of it immediately because you can see the potential there. Like, you know, the DIY and the Revival are two teams that would just tear it up, you know, on one of the main roster shows. And so to me, it's like, you know, there's tag division on both shows, and it seems like SmackDown could use some heels and the Raw side could use some real baby faces. Why wouldn't you make those puzzle pieces fit? And I know you don't want to deprive NXT of talent, but it's very clearly taken a step back on the priority list since the brand split, you know, for being loaded with stars. And so why not make it happen? You know, I don't know if they want to do that right now. It'll probably be after WrestleMania, but I have a feeling that we're going to see some graduations on that show, and maybe it will take a while to rebuild it to where it feels like it's full of stars again. But there's just too much at stake, with television ratings slipping and that kind of stuff to have all that talent just be relegated to takeovers and a show that people don't really watch on the network.
Yep, I just look at it and go, there's so much talent that WWE can use here. There's so much talent that can make Raw and SmackDown both better shows and can help those brands. And keeping them solely on the network, I get it. From one standpoint, I get wanting to drive subscribers there, but I think WWE could leave two great talents in NXT and fill the show with developmental prospects or indie guys getting ready for the main roster, and move a lot of those main roster ready talents like The Revival, like Samoa Joe, like Shinsuke Nakamura to a place where they are going to be more valued and more essential to WWE's main storytelling. Because WWE's main storytelling also not that good for the most part. Jake, the last thing I wanted to bring up is that Raw is a terrible, no good, very bad show that never should be watched.
Yeah, I'm almost in complete agreement with you. I there are a few bright spots, don't get me wrong. I mean, there's people that I enjoy
Braun
watching.
Strowman.
You know what? I'll give Braun Strowman credit. He's the only guy on Raw that feels dangerous.
Yeah. Literally, Braun Strowman is a bright spot of Raw, and that blows my mind.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you look at the way that they've booked heels and babyfaces on Raw, and it's just it's in shambles. You know, they just don't have credible threats for guys like Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, and so they flounder as babyfaces because there's no adversity for them to run up against. There's no Brock Lesnar appearing on weekly television that people genuinely fear, or there's no real dastardly heels. I think Kevin Owens could be that guy if they gave him that character, but it's just not who they envision him being. And that's a real shame, because I think when he first emerged onto the main roster from NXT, he did have that sense of danger and around him, but it's just not there anymore. They've just kind of beaten it out of him.
Yeah, they just don't have enough on Raw. Don't have enough creative power on Raw. It's a show built around Stephanie for some reason. It's a show without a main protagonist. It's a show with the jokes for antagonists. Raw has been the most consistently disappointing thing in wrestling in 2016 for me.
It's a show that has essentially been co-opted by Mick Foley and Stephanie McMahon. They're on that show at least a half an hour of TV time every week between the two of them, maybe even a little bit more. And you look at and juxtapose that with SmackDown, where you might see Daniel Bryan once or twice, and it's in brief backstage segments. And if you look at what we saw on Tuesday for that big end of the year show, we didn't even see him once. We saw no authority figures, not
an
one.
An entire wrestling TV show without an authority figure cameo. It was crazy.
Glorious. Yeah, it was great. Shane and I don't even think they were in the building, to be honest. Brian didn't even appear on Talking Smack. He must have been somewhere for holiday, and Shane hasn't been around for a couple weeks now. So if you can build a show that can survive without storyline or without authority figures from a storyline perspective, you're better off. And I don't think Raw would make any sense if one week Mick Foley and Stephanie McMahon just didn't appear. I mean, it would be good because it would force them to do interesting things, but they've built their narratives around them, and it's stupid.
Yeah, it's a really bad decision to build so much into and around those authority figures, and Raw has suffered because of that bad decision and because WWE couldn't help themselves in doing so. Hopefully we end up getting a much better Raw in 2017. Jake, can I ask you what you are dreading the most in the new year?
I get worried about, a lot of things in pro wrestling. Like you look at the horizon and it's like, well, Vince is still running these shows. Like, is it possible that that we could see, you know, a drop in quality if Vince becomes unhappy about some petty thing that's happening on, you know, is he going to get upset because SmackDown had a bigger audience than Raw this week? And you know, does that mean he's going to, you know, upend the tea tables creatively on that show just to put him in their place? You know, that kind of thing. Like, it's little things like that where it's like you can't really predict what's going to go on in the mind of Vince McMahon, who, you know, for, you know, he's brilliant in some respects, but he's also, you know, very petty and has some weird idiosyncrasies. And so, you know, how does that play out in 2017 will be anybody's guess. But I guess, you know, we opened you know, by talking about women's wrestling, and that's I guess, you know, the thing that I probably dread the absolute most, where it's like, can they finally take this seriously without having to, you know, to have it be about men, and can it really be an inspiration for young girls? I don't know. I hope so, because I think they have an aspirational group of women who want to do great things, and it's just a matter of putting them in a creative position to do so. And I hope we get that in 2017, but I fear, you know, more of the same.
Yep. I fear more of the same, and fear that we will see match quality or other things go down as they run out of first time onlys. I definitely think that could be something we see where it's like, oh, remember that one time when women main evented a pay-per-view? It's a shame that'll never happen again. And I, like I said, I'm optimistic the WWE continues and builds on that progress. But given their track record, I think 1 year of treating women well and something like 25 of or 50 of not, I'm going to err on the side of pessimism there. I'm dreading whatever Raw's main event ends up being for WrestleMania. It's probably going to involve Roman Reigns. I hope it's not another hackneyed attempt to get Roman Reigns cheered the way last year was, that just falls completely flat at the end of an exhausting show. I think Raw is way too dependent on that sort of thing, and I really don't want to deal with that again.
You're going to think I'm crazy, but I don't think the Roman Reigns factors into Raw's main event at all.
Really?
Yeah, I just don't think it's going to be a coronation ceremony for him. They're not going to attempt that again, at least not after what last year's main event turned into. I mean, we're going to have Seth Rollins and Triple H, which I think will probably end up being the actual main event. And then you're going to see whoever ends up being the WWE or the Universal Champion. You know, I think you could see, you know, that being – you know, Kevin Owens even. I mean, they might put Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho in that spot because I think they're headed for a big match.
Wow. I kind of see Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho being out of the being out of that championship picture by that time. But hey, I think
you're going to see Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman for the U.S. Championship. That's nice. My prediction.
Interesting.
But
yeah,
there we are.
Yeah, that'll wrap it up for us. Happy New Year, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this ProWrestling.net podcast. For more, make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, hit us up with a rating, and tell your friends. Also, please check out the goodness of ProWrestling.net membership. Bye!